Welcome to The Running Public with Bracken Crocker and Kirk DeWint. It's Tuesday, folks, and you know what that means. Training Tuesday.
We are going to take every rabbit hole, follow tangents, use useless metaphors, get lost in the weeds. This is Training Tuesday.
When you're ready to take your training or racing to the next level, go to therunningpublic.com. We have both monthly subscription training plans, $19.99 a month, and Bracken and I both offer one-on-one customized coaching. Again, go to therunningpublic.com and check out our offerings. Bracken, I was oh so close to you, yet oh so far away this weekend, and it's kind of sad.
It was almost shocking, the situation.
Shocking, huh?
Yeah. You live, what, 5 hours from me?
Yes. Just over, yeah. 5 hours from you.
You were now 5 minutes from me this weekend, and we did not see each other.
Didn't even get a butt slap in there. It's unbelievable.
Nope.
I was in town. I was in Milwaukee, Bracken's backyard, for a bachelor party. But it was like a quick trip in, hang for like a day and a half, out. And they're just, we could have high-fived. And honestly, I was maybe going to see what you had going on Sunday, but we had a big snowstorm come through and it ended up taking me 90 minutes longer to drive home. So I left at like 6 a.m. after being out all night with the guys. It was kind of miserable. So it wasn't, otherwise maybe Sunday we could have like fist bumped and hung for an hour, but it wasn't in the cards. I felt like almost I was cheating on you, or like being deceitful, like being in your town, but like not seeing you. Felt icky.
You know what I had to do? I just didn't tell anyone you were in town, and I didn't think about it.
I thought about you all weekend.
No, I didn't think about it one time, because I would have been like, I would have messaged you like, hey, let's just go grab a quick workout. I'm all set up. Come do it. Because you were at Potawatomi Casino and Hotel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is not like my thing.
Which is essentially across the street from Marquette University Track.
Yeah.
Is that on Canal Street?
I don't know. Do you ever go? You don't go to that track to work out, do you?
Yeah. So I used to. I used to run down there, do a workout, run back. That's how close you were to my house.
Oh, within running distance. Dang.
It's like 3 to 4 miles. If I wanted a long, if I wanted a big volume day, that's where I'd go.
Mm. Whoopsie.
Do you remember back the leaderboard carry test, heavy carry test?
Oh, yeah.
When I first filmed it and described it, that was the track I did it on.
Oh, yeah. I remember watching those videos for the tutorial. Bringing me back.
Yep. That was there.
Yeah, casinos are an interesting place. Maybe I'll just leave it at that. I don't know. But it's great people watching. Yeah. And my philosophy on gambling, so I don't like get excited about like pulling slots or sitting there like a zombie, which you look around and half the people are doing that. And then I feel like half the people are having like a normal time, whatever you want to make of that statement. But I just go in and I take $100 and I put it in. I go to the high stakes room. Slide that $100 bill in there, gets taken in. This time I decided to bet $25 a pull. I don't want to mess around. Kirk gets right to business, right? I'm like, I'm either winning, you're going to hit in the first 4 or 5 pulls, and you're going to be over $100 and you cash out right away, or it's all gone and it's done, and I'm happy it's done. Second pull, $254, walked out of there, happy as a clam. Paid for my hotel room. 2 pulls is what I gambled this weekend. I literally did it twice.
Good for you.
And it works. It's my third time in a row coming out ahead with that approach. High stakes, $20 or more a pull. Live or die on that. It was $300, $500, and now almost it was $250 this last time. So that's a hot tip for you. Anybody listening?
The ability to walk away is rare.
Oh, I've walked away from a lot of things in my day, Bracken.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll leave all of that right there.
All right.
Should we get rolling?
Yeah, we should get rolling. I actually hit, which was nice about driving down, and then we'll jump into this.
Oh, no. Tell me what you hit.
Well, I had to drive somewhat by the trail, in which I have a trail race in 3 weeks, the Zumbro 17 miler, and it's southeast of where I live, and Milwaukee is southeast of where I live. So I got to go and hit my last true long run. I believe 3 weeks out from an A race should be your last true long run. I don't even think it should be 2 weeks. I think it should be 3. Like your decent hammer swing long run. So I was able to hit that on the actual race course trail. It's just interesting to go out. I've been getting dialed in on both the Afton Trail Race course, which comes up in July, and then Zumbro, which is in less than 3 weeks. And you go run it at like an easy, maybe a sort of cut down effort. And I go run 2 hours and 27 minutes on a course in which I hope to run a half an hour faster in 3 weeks. And it becomes a little daunting to think, oh, an easy long run. Mm-hmm. Like where's the half an hour going to come from? But that's really the difference between racing, truly racing, and going out and putting what we would call low grade time on feet. I'm trying to run under 2 hours, and here I just ran the exact course in 227. Granted, there's 3 inches of snow on the ground, and there's all these other factors. But you start wondering, like, whew, like, yeah, you're going to have to really calculate and nail this thing. It's a lot of time to take off. But that's also the parity of racing and training. It's just there's a big gap there.
Yeah, I think it's important to get scared close to race day, where you get to the end of your two and a half hour run, and you think, I feel this tired now, and I didn't push early. It's a good, just kind of scared straight moment where you realize I have to pace intelligently.
100%.
Because you start feeling in workouts, it's easy to start dreaming. I'm just going to go rip on race day. Now you need a little bit of cold water on those dreams close to race day.
It's exactly what I came out thinking. Okay, here's where feathering the gas is going to be feathered through, you know, this point mm-hmm. before I start maybe pushing a little harder. Anyways, that's how my training's going. I think I've been 6 weeks in a row with a 2 hour long run or longer on the weekend. I think 6 weeks in a row, maybe seven. So things are clicking on my end. I think I'm ready to go hammer. Yeah. Should we continue what we started last week, Brackenstein?
We must.
So we started a series last week, like how to train or run your best blank. And last week we talked all about the mile, how to run your best mile. Talked about training leading in and everything that we think is required to race your best mile. And we're going to progress up today to the 5K, which I think are utterly different beasts. The intention with the series is to go from the mile to the 5K. Next week, we're tentatively thinking of lumping the half marathon and the marathon together. Then following that, we're going to switch over to hybrid and then possibly address the ultra or some trail nuances in the week after that. But this is going to be a 4 or 5 week series. So today we get to split hairs on the 5K.
The good news for everyone who sat through, 65 minutes of us pontificating about the nuances of the mile is that if you've listened to that, you are 50% of the way through this episode already.
Right.
Everything I believe about training for a mile, I believe about training for a 5K. Just move up one standard deviation of pace. The whole, I like to race down to that.
Sure.
Most of my work's going to be done for the first half of prep, slightly slower than 5K, and then you're going to sharpen up with faster efficiency work. So the general gist of last week certainly applies this week.
Yeah, and the 5K is like the holy grail of running. Like it is the universal metric mm-hmm. in which fitness, performance, ability is judged. You want to race a marathon? Great. Somebody's going to say, well, what's this 5K time? You want to run a fast trail race, an OCR, a high rocks or hybrid event? That 5K is sort of the epicenter for a starting point of gauging true endurance fitness. It's where we all come together. And so I think this one is the most hair-splitting worthy of them all because it's an indicator distance of deviations down and up. It's like, what is your actual potential? And everything else, I think, kind of revolves and circles the 5K. You agree with that?
I agree, and I think it's highly unfair of the 5K to do that to us. I really don't think it's fair.
No?
No. If you think about the distance one below, the mile, whether you are very fast, we're talking 3.5 minutes, or very slow, we're talking 10 minutes. It's really short. Even the slow people listening to this podcast, if you're running a 10 to 12 minute mile all out, you would be considered on the very slow end of runners. And that is still highly, highly, highly anaerobic.
Yep.
That is still kind of that hate yourself, turn your body inside out type of pain. You know, if you set out to run a mile, you just have to run right on the edge and hang on from halfway on. It's really, really bad, but it's really high intensity and it's over. And if you look at one deviation slower than 5K, which generally is 10K pace, the fastest on earth, low 26 minutes. Thus, mm-hmm. an average to slower end would be an hour. That's right in the threshold range, which means you get to run on the safe side of hurt for most of the time. But the 5K, whether you're exceptionally fast, we're talking 12 and a half minutes, or an everyday person, 25, 28 minutes, that's all in that middle zone where it hurts a lot. It's definitely anaerobic, but it's also very aerobic, and you can come at it from so many different skill sets, and it's, I don't know, just inherently unfair that that's the distance that gets the most attention and predicts the most, but there's so many ways for it to go wrong because you can't just rev and you can't just sit, and if you're slow twitch or fast twitch, it hurts differently. So I just really don't like this distance at all, Kirk.
You like personally like have a vendetta out for this distance because of its sharpness?
Yes.
Because it's like it's a labeler of things. It's like labels you.
It's sharp dullness.
Sharp dull sharpness. Okay. I think I'm understanding.
Yes, because every great runner can run a good 5K.
Yeah.
All runners are expected to have a 5K time, but fast twitch versus slow twitch, talented versus untalented, the 5K presents so differently to every person, yet it's the great like litmus test for runners. So I strongly dislike it.
But you agree that it still is the epicenter, sort of like...
It is. It's the meeting ground.
Determiner of ability, right. The interesting thing, you brought up a decent point about time scale. Let's say us humans listening that aren't professional runners, the very fast end, 15 minutes, I would say, and the slow end, 40 minutes or even more. They actually become very different races and maybe would require different approaches. A 15-minute 5K, I ran 15:17 in the summer, and I think I breached threshold on lap one and stayed above it the remainder of the race. Right? It is VO2 max, anaerobic at points. It is not threshold at all. If you are running a half an hour 5K, which is very common, suddenly there's, well, enthusiasm should be tempered a bit earlier because the duration is longer. Should it or should it not require a different approach? Because it could take you 2 to 3 times as long as somebody run it quickly. And now we're almost talking different energy systems for portions of the race. So it's just an interest, but with you said with the mile, no, it's no matter how slow or fast you are in quotes, we're using the same energy system and it's pain. And it doesn't matter. You don't even check your heart rate monitor during a mile, no matter what your time is, it's you go and rip. And so there's we could get really lost in the weeds on all of those things. I think we try to sort of still blanket statement the most, like our general philosophy for the most part, regardless if you're a 15er or a 45-minute 5K-er. But just I wanted to like kind of say that the nuances there could be spread pretty far depending on ability level with the 5K in particular.
Yeah, and in part of the 5Ks, you don't really know when it's going to be miserable, but you know it will be. In the mile, what we just talked about, you know after 400 meters, it's going to get progressively worse every step. By the end of lap two, you're not feeling good. You're being poisoned already by your body. You're being starved for oxygen, your lactate buildup.
If you're racing it well, if you're actually racing.
Yeah, if you're just racing hard.
Yeah, hard, yeah.
Yeah, there's no comfort in the mile. It doesn't, after the first lap, it's bad. In the 10K, very often you can make it halfway or more within yourself. Like in control, feeling steady, start to cut down or get into it. In the 5K, there's no real gold standard for when it's going to get bad. And I think that that unknown makes it miserable too. Like my PR, I was feeling like I was floating for 800 meters. And by the time I got to the mile, I was like, I feel extremely fatigued right now. And this isn't sustainable. And then I felt like slow death from the mile to the 2 mile. And then closed hard, but was miserable all the way through. That was 2 miles of the 3 mile race were misery. But the second fastest 5K I ever ran, I was in control until about 800 meters to go. The unknown of it is such, it screws with your mind as well.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that before we jump into specifics. On the training front, the question is how, if you're going to go out and really give a true effort and be proud of yourself when you cross the finish line or the time trial line, like how should a well-raced 5K feel? I think is a really good starting point. Like how should that go? You know, we talk about how approaching interval workouts, it's like, well, I'm halfway through and I'm saying, I don't know, but maybe. like, maybe I can keep this pace. Like, there's these questions you must ask yourself throughout. And what I actually find in the 5K personally is if you're truly setting yourself up to reach close to your potential on that day, you should already be saying or pushing the uh-oh button about a mile in, going, oh boy, like, I am not sure already if I have made a huge mistake, really. And what happens is you hit, you're roughly a mile in, you're like, I'm hurting more than I anticipated. Shoot. And then you choose to sink your teeth in for the next 4 to 6 laps, next mile to mile and a half. You just say, hey, like, I'm going to do whatever I can to stay on this pace. And hopefully that breath of life, when you realize the finish line is finally getting closer, you're able to just hang on to that same pacing again, and you cross the finish line squeezing every ounce you could have out of yourself, but really doubting if you made the right decision from about mile 1 to mile 2.5. But that's where the race is made or lost, is that middle mile. But anytime I've raced well, I've hit the mile already on the edge of in control, to be honest with you. And then figured it, just gutted out the middle portion, and then it found something at the end that I didn't know would be there or not. How accurate do you find that for your, if you're racing your potential again? You can go up more, you can go conservative and feel 7 out of 10 discomfort at the mile and be relatively comfortable and kick home and feel pretty good and only hurt for maybe a mile, mile and a half. But you might have left 5 seconds on the table there, and that counts for something. And I think that is set up early in the race if you have the fitness to back it up.
Yeah. I think in the mile or the 1500, my senior year of college, I ran 358 4 or 5 times. They were all different styles of race.
Sure.
One time I sat in a pack and it whittled down and there were 2 of us left at the end. Another time it was slow and so I led into a headwind and faded. Another time we dawdled at the conference championship for 3 laps and then it was a mad dash to the finish. 4 different ways probably of running within 2 or 3 tenths of the same time. Sure. The 5K I don't think happens that way if you're running up near your ceiling.
Yeah.
It's either I went out, faded a little in the second mile and got back on it, or I ran really well paced and got on it towards the end. It's really hard to PR a 5K without closing hard. In the mile, you can hang on and die slowly and run well. But in the 5K, there's so much of a swing that last 800 meters to 1,000 meters, somewhere in there, that can happen if you're closing hard versus if you're failing, that the pacing matters, and oftentimes it doesn't correlate to how you're feeling. So yeah, sometimes you're hurting at a mile. Sometimes you're hurting at a mile and a half. One time it didn't hit me till 2 miles, and then suddenly it all hit me. Like in that last 1,200 meters, it was just like, what is happening? I was doing so well, and now I'm not. But either way, you have to be closing hard to run a good 5K. There's too much time to die out there on the track or on the road or on the cross-country course.
Yeah, you can thrash your way and finish well in the mile. You can thrash through the finish line ugly even if you need to. It doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. Just get there and keep forward momentum. In the 5K, it's like it's a fine line between within yourself, but like you're just over the line, just a little bit. Enough to still run efficiently and not reach. But anyways, I agree with you. And to follow that up, the 5K is absolutely made with a conscious decision. I'll just say from a mile to 2, 2.5. It is a conscious decision to sink your teeth into that distance and not just feather off the gas because it starts to get uncomfortable. It is actually a very mentally engaging distance in that middle section if you are going to stay on it. It's so, so easy to just stay just far enough away from the sun to feel it but not be burnt. But then you look and you're 10 seconds slower on mile 2 and say, how did that happen? And guess what? You're going to feel about the same whether you stayed on pacing or you didn't. At 2 miles, you're going to end up in nearly the same pain realm. Regardless, you're going to end up there. So the 5K is really made from mile 1 ticking to mile 2, 2.5 is where you actually have to be very present and very conscious. And you notice yourself slipping, you need to re-engage. Again, this is all to run your best 5K. You can run close other ways, but I'm saying your best. That's how it typically happens. And people sort of lose sight of that, right? You get to the mile and it hurts you. Like, there's no way I can sustain this. And you back off and you kick home the last half mile and you feel good about your performance. And it probably was a good performance. But there's probably a little bit left on the table. So that's been my experience with good races, my PR race.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. It's so important to remember that no matter how well your training block went, no matter how fit you are going to feel like you can't finish the 5K, that the pace is not sustainable. And it's that decision point right in that moment. People think one of two things. They either feel that terrible burn start, you know, you start to get nauseous in your stomach, your lungs are burning too much, your hamstrings are already burning in a way you didn't expect them to. And you either think it's not my day or I'm not fit enough, or you think, all right, that means I'm on it today. I'm already getting to that. I just have to make it another half mile and then I can start to close the race out. That's the only difference between running fast and running slow. And in my 3 or 4 fastest 5Ks ever, I had to fight the urge to drop out from 1.5 miles to 2 miles. Actively fight. And I've talked about it on here before, but especially in my PR race, I wanted to quit every step from 1.25 miles till 2.25. Every step, I had to fight my own mind and say, no, just try it for a little while longer. Because there was no way it was going to be my day the way I was feeling. I knew that to be true. And then suddenly you get that little flicker of hope and you realize it still can be my day. You just have to fight those demons off for a while. And that's part of why the 5K is so unfair. It's that if you do it well, you don't feel like you could possibly be doing well.
Yeah, it's kind of true, isn't it? And it's that whole like fighting for it while, like the asterisk is while relaxed, which is like almost a contradictory statement in this whole thing, but it is true. And there's other ways to do it, folks. Some of you out there may PR your best 5K by simply running conservative, progressing throughout. Like, there are not universal truths, right? These are just our experiences. You may need to go out hard and commit and then suffer the rest of the way and fade a little. There might be a right approach for all of you, but I think like if you look at even any world record that's been set in the 5K or any high level 5K race that ends up going out and being a race versus a tactical race. You look at this, they're probably going to follow what we're talking about. If you just look at the splits, you look at the facts of how the race is played out, they're going to be very much what we're outlining from like a pace standpoint, almost even across the board or out hot, just slightly slower second mile. They're all going to be within seconds of each other. They're going to be very close. And then somebody's going to find a hard close the last 400 to 800 meters that's going to be faster than the rest of their race was, and that will be who won slash set the record typically, right? It's almost bang on before that. So how about this? If you were going to say a blanket statement how to like train for your best 5K, like if you have one philosophy to rule them all. I have a statement I've got in the chamber already, so this is unfair.
Okay.
So I can open, but do you have anything that jumps out? Like if like the first thing that comes to mind, like how to train to run your best 5K, what would be like a principle or two, I guess?
Oh, I'm put on the spot here, but if I had to come up with one right now, I would say you must be strong enough for a 10K and tough enough for a mile. Tough enough slash fast enough for a mile. And I think the mile piece doesn't have to be there very long. Just looking for that efficiency of running fast that makes 5K feel more relaxed and knowing how bad something can sting faster than 5K so that you're not like totally destroyed mentally when the 5K hurts the way it hurts. But I think most people need to race down to the 5K from a place of strength with just enough dose of speed to do well.
We're so cute and you don't even know it.
You've got to stop letting me lead because I feel like I just keep taking what you're about to say.
I was going to use the word 10K was going to come up in my statement, and mine is how to race your best 5K, train like it's a 10K. That simple as it puts,
yeah.
It stems from strength. It doesn't stem from speed. 10K workouts are going to get you to probably your best 5K with just that little bit of spice in the very last lead-in, which you could call mile work. It couldn't be any further closer to what you just said. So I think over training the 5K is the best formula for most. What does that look like? Like, what are you explaining? Yeah. What am I explaining? A heavy focus on threshold work, of course, the long grindy potential intervals with short rest. But I think the key factor until you're really getting dialed in the last, like, let's say month, is the volume of your quality sessions. A lot of people who are entering the 5K realm or trying to run a fast 5K may say, well, I will do 12 by 400 meters. That's 3 miles of quality work, and I'm mm-hmm. racing roughly 3 miles on the track, so that is the right prescription. When very much my philosophy might be, you want to run a great 5K, which is 3 miles? Great. Let's go 6 by a mile today. We're going to double it. And yes, of course, those miles are going to be slower than goal 5K pace, but the volume of your quality sessions should reflect more of what a 10K athlete is doing versus a 5K, because that's what you need to rely on in those middle miles and then to get you home. And so is that sort of what you were getting at with that statement as well? Or talk me through that.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, in high school, we ran 12 by 400, we ran 6 by 800, and we ran 3 by mile. Those were our standard cross-country workouts for the 5K. And what do those all have in common? They add up to 3 miles, which in and of itself is a fallacy because it brings you about 160 meters short.
Sure.
So you're already not even doing race distance. And by the nature of having shorter intervals and less volume, you're going to run them hard. And we do them with about 3 minutes recovery. It just... what I think is that when people hear I have a 5K race, I want a PR, I need to get faster, they think about how bad it hurts and about how fast it feels when it starts, and they focus on mm-hmm. that end. Well, the speed training, the fast work, 5K or faster pace takes care of the first mile for you, and then it hangs you out to dry. Threshold work, staying power work, long intervals at high volume takes you from mile 1 to 3. And then the speed work kicks in again that last 100 meters or 200 meters. But the fast stuff only gets you to the bad point of the race. The long stuff carries you through the bad part. And so I think you have to start with the emergency raft first. You build the bad part in training, and then you sharpen down to the fast part.
Well, the interesting thing, just thinking about my own training and progression, I chased 5Ks on the road for a good bit in my early 30s before I found Spartan and OCR, and then really recommitted to endurance training for the last decade, really. But I think I circled 1609 to 1620. Like, it was like, this is called 1610 to 20 every race. It was like I went and raced and I fell somewhere in that slot. And I would go at that time. I wasn't coached and I wasn't quite the student of the sport I am now, of course, but 12 by 400 meters, sure. 60 seconds rest, 90 seconds rest, any of that stuff. And I would I would fake fitness in those workouts. I could go and run my 67s for 12 by a quarter with a minute rest or do something like that. That really puffed me up. I'm telling you right now, I don't think I'd run any different in those workouts today than I would back then. Yep, I'm running a minute faster in my 5K. Where did that come from? It didn't come from my cute 400s, 3 miles worth, because that workout on paper has not changed for me in the last decade. Everything else changed for me. In fact, when I was running 1610, I might have even had more impressive short overspeed training interval workouts because it doesn't translate nearly as well as now all the threshold work and the tempo work I've done and the long intervals and 7 miles of quality work in my quality sessions, which is a mainstay for me now, like you and I did in our split tempo together in our man weekend. It's like, anyways, just outlining how important, like just driving home the importance of the longer stuff. That's the only difference for me in the last decade. And look what happened, right? And so I've experienced that firsthand.
Yeah. We're going to talk times a lot today. So you're just going to have to deal with it and not say that we're bragging. We're doing it to show percentage of training and correlation right to what we're doing. But my final year of college, like I said, I ran 358 for the 1500 several times. I ran the equivalent of about a 414, 415 mile that year at my best. I had run a 153, 800 several times. I was relatively fast for the average person. That's pretty quick. Mm-hmm. It's not lights out for a college runner, but to put in perspective, I could run a 414 mile. And on June 2nd, after Nationals, when is Nationals, Kirk? May?
Yeah, it's end of May.
Yeah, so 2-3 weeks removed from running my fastest mile and 1500. I took second in our conference 1500 outdoor that year. So I'm in good shape. I ran a 1639 road 5K and it nearly cost me my life. I was sick to my stomach for like 90 minutes afterwards. 1639 and a 414 mile, Kirk.
Well, let me interject just so the people listening understand what that means. Let's say he was a 413 miler, give or take, that would equate to a sub fit. He should be running in the 14s for his 5K.
1440s.
So equivalent if you're going to use, like, you're 2 minutes behind, which tells you about stay power, right?
Yeah, 1639 is about 520 pace per mile. You shouldn't have over a minute per mile difference between your mile and your 5K.
No.
That's not how it should look. That showed, but what were we doing? We were running a lot of 200s, 300s, and 400s in college. Extremely fast. We cut out all threshold work throughout all of indoor and outdoor. I don't think I did a single tempo run past January or February of that year. We trained like 400 meter runners. I had nothing for a 5K, despite most people. If I said, go out there, you can run a 414 mile right now. You're like, I'm going to crush a 5K. Because the missing part is your speed. Fast forward, I find obstacle course racing, which at the beginning, I couldn't even tell my college teammates I was doing because I was embarrassed. I was that guy doing mud runs. But all you do in OCR is threshold work, tempo work. And it's usually disguised as long mountain hill repeats or things like that, or compromised running. And I would just check in on my 5K by running a solo 5K almost time trial. And I knew if I was running between 1615 and 1625, I was in decent shape. Just by myself, running 1615 to 1625, faster than my all-out race when I was doing so much speed work. And this was just off OCR work. And this would be my third workout of the week. It was just so much different when I was doing only long stamina-based workout versus when I was doing only fast work. And people really generally think I need to work faster. And they forget that that doesn't carry you from mile one to three. That gets you to mile one.
As a coach, what do you hear more than anything? It's like, I need more speed. I feel slow. Like you hear it all that, like, to appease your athletes, like, they'd feel like you're giving them a good plan. If you're like, well, quarter mile repeats again, oh, we're going to run miles really hard with lots of rest. So we're going to be like, yes, that's what I need. Wrong. You're wrong. That's not what you need. It's like building your snowman upside down is what speed training exclusively does. It's like putting the head on the bottom.
That's really good. I like that.
And then maybe the middle piece stays. Maybe you hang on for mile two. But by the time you get to mile three, which is the big heavy part on the bottom of the snowman, which is now on top, the whole thing crumbles. And it looks like a pile of shit when it's done.
Right.
That's what your 5K does on just speed work alone. So I think we drove that point home, right?
Do you see how dark it's getting here?
Yeah, do you have the snowstorm rolling through?
No, we have a rainstorm now. Oh. We got 8 inches of snow this week, and now suddenly we're just in a rain.
It's been snowing here for like 30 hours straight now.
Anyway, so Kirk, following that analogy, the first thing people see when they look at your snowman is how cute the face looks. But it's the last thing you put on there. And that's exactly how this works. Yep. So people are right. They do need to be faster and they do need more speed work because most people are not efficient when they run fast. But we know that that type of efficiency can be built in 3 weeks. So what we start with, and this is how I ran my 5K PR, which is admittedly slower than yours, but it was on the exact same course that I ran that 1639 5K that almost killed me. I ran a 1542 5K on the exact same course. So it is a one-to-one correlation. And prior to that, so we had talked before that 1639 is about 520 race pace. 1542 is about 502 race pace. So I was 18 seconds per mile faster in my 30s versus my 20s. And I was doing only OCR work. And my brother had been in town for a while. He'd been staying at my parents' house. And so he and I had been running threshold work. It was a little quicker than threshold probably, but we had done 5x1500 on West Dallas Hales track. 5x1500 at 5 flat. We would run 5 flat every rep. What pace is that per mile?
525. 520.
Yeah, so you're running the 520s on that workout. We did that twice. We did on the cross country course, we did something like 10x800 one time. And then 2 days before the race, we did 1x2 mile, 2x800, 2x400. In the 520s. So on the cross country course, those 520s are probably worth more like 515, 518, somewhere like that because it's grass. But the point is, and I wasn't planning on racing, so that was 2 days before the race. Point is, my 6 or 7 lead up workouts were all right around 515 to 525 pace. And I went out and averaged 502.
Yeah.
Now, granted, I have a higher end fast twitch than a lot of runners, but I didn't touch race pace one time. And as a result, I wanted to quit every step from mile and a quarter to 2 1/4, but I didn't have to. It was supremely uncomfortable. If I could do this over, I would have added in 2 to 3 weeks of faster work so that it wasn't so uncomfortable. But I had this nice, sturdy chair to sit back into during that time as I was being tortured.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was torture, but it was a really nice chair. And then I got to stand up at the end and close hard. And that is exactly how you build a 5K.
So I think they get it. You listening, I think you get it now. I would argue that training like for a, other than what you're talking about, the lead in, like, let's say you're really going for broke and you have an A5K and you want to really hammer the last 3 to 5 weeks, there's going to be some overspeed work. The stuff we're talking about, the quicker turnover stuff, the efficiency work, that is important to really sharpening the very end to reach your true potential. But we're talking about what got you to the start line to start with, and that's all the other stuff. And so with that, I would argue that the 5K-er should train more like a marathoner than a miler, even though the marathon's 23 miles further, which is kind of gross to think about. A mile's 2 miles less. A marathon's 23 miles more, yet I believe you'd be better serviced overtraining for something as far as a marathon versus undertraining something like the mile. You even see, like, I was just watching more track races today, and you see Josh Kerr, who is the world champion in the 1500 meter and just at the 2 mile world record indoors anyways, running a half marathon in January. Ultimately, his goal is to be the world champion in the Olympics in the 1500, runs a half marathon in January, races 2 miles and 3Ks on the track indoors. He didn't even run the mile or 1500 indoor world championships yet because he's choosing to overdistance before he really hammers home before the Olympic Games. And then he's a pro athlete. And he understands the value in a half marathon, or his coach does at least, which is 3 times his desired race distance in his build. And so now we're really hammering. We need to stop pounding on it. So, okay, you know what we're getting at. So what do you, let's get specific then. Let's talk about the workouts that matter, not the spicy stuff, not the cute stuff the last month or 3 weeks, the bulk, the backbone of this thing. What is it looking like quality session wise?
All right. So the simplest possible way to this, if you want to do this yourself, I think you go out there and you find any template for how to run your best 10K. And you just follow that for 5 to 6 weeks, maybe 7. And then you find how to run your best mile or 5K, depending on what you need more of, you know, 5K speed or over speed. And you do that for 3 weeks and then you go out and race. I think it's as simple as that. When I first was dabbling into not being an interval, like a spicy interval based runner post-collegiately, when I found OCR and I was trying to train for the Spartan Race World Championships, I typed in best 10K workouts and this progression popped up on this website. And it was something like week one, you're running 10 by 1,000 with like a minute, minute and a half rest. In week two, you're running 2 by mile and 5 by 1,000. And in week three, you're running 4 by mile and 3 by 1,000 or something like that. And then week four, you're going to do 6 by mile. And then after that, you're going to do 1 by 2 mile and 3 by mile. And eventually you cap with 3 by 2 mile.
Sure.
All of these around what you can currently do in a 10K. You could do something as simple as that. Train for your very best 2 mile or 10K. And then instead of doing that last capstone 3 by 2 mile workout, just shift to fast stuff for like 2 or 3 weeks and go race. And that fast stuff could be 5K or mile pace or both. It doesn't really matter to me. You build the engine big like you're training for a 10K for anywhere from 4 to 8 weeks. And then you do something faster than that for 2 to 4 weeks and you're set. And I'm sure we're going to get more detailed than that, but I could go back to that first 10K progression that I found online and follow that to my best 5K right now.
I agree with you across the board. I think, well, it goes without saying, but I guess it shouldn't go without saying that there are still like true threshold workouts in here, like just labeling them. So, you know, like, for example, if I'm pursuing the 5K, I very may well go out and hit what I call like an 8 mile tempo. Like that may be one of my quality sessions where I'm running 45 seconds slower than 5K pace or more, but sustaining, right? Working system. So that's not flashy at all. I'm not even getting close to 5K pace, but it's the backbone of the whole system, right? And so those slower paced, but like grindy sessions are still in there in that phase, right? And you're getting at that with, I mean, 10 by 1,000 or any yes. of those things similar. And I think the rule of thumb about train for your 10K really comes down to like when you're designing a workout, look at the total mileage, as we mentioned, and say, you know what, either way, I'm getting to 5 miles today. My rule is a little higher. I like 6 or 7, but as I dial in, I might do 5. And then a month out, I might be only getting to 4. And then the last 3 weeks with my quality sessions, I might only hit 2-3 full miles of quality, but they're over speed. Anyways, the volume should be your limiting factor here. If you're going to do 6 by a mile, keep the rest short. And by proxy, the volume of those repetitions plus slightly shorter rest, let's say 90 seconds or something, is going to be a rev limiter. It's going to force you to do most of your running in threshold. It's going to keep you from tipping over too soon, and it's going to, again, build your backbone. So by proxy, higher volume quality sessions are going to be a rev limiter, right? Even if I said, Bracken, go do 24 by 400 meters with 60 seconds rest, okay, that looks like a speed session on paper to a lot of people, but because of the volume, it's going to temper your enthusiasm with pacing. And I'm not condoning necessarily that workout specifically. It's more of an example. But what I'm saying is the volume...
But it could be there.
It could, right, it could. It's a nice comfy pillow to sleep on to say, hey, I'm making the right decision. If my total quality adds up to, let's say, 4+ miles, ideally closer to double, 6, you're probably getting the right metabolic stimulus by default, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, you are. It's you're going to have some mental discomfort throughout this time because you're going to be thinking, this just can't be making me faster. But what you're doing right now is you're raising your floor. That's what we're doing. We're bringing that threshold as close to the 5K range as we can from the bottom. And then at the end, we're going to touch your ceiling. But the ceiling can only be worked on for so long. The floor can be worked on indefinitely. And the floor is what you revert back to in your bad times. So when you first start this, if let's say you're trying to run a 20-minute 5K for the first time, and you have to be able to run in the, 6:30s the whole time, well, we're going to start running at 7-minute pace. And by the end, if you can do 7-minute pace in your sleep, the bad part of your race won't quite get to 7-minute pace. And you can absorb a 30-minute in that and then get back on it. But what you need to do is bring your floor upwards as high as possible so that there's nothing bad that can happen during the race when it gets really bad. And then at the end, we paint the ceiling. But that can happen last.
And a nice workaround with this too is like, I need to feel that pace because like 5K pace, because otherwise I'll feel inefficient and I'll lose my confidence. And that I understand. And this is a great time to do, I mean, you could do something like, let's say as simple as 5 by a mile, big rest, finish with 4 by a quarter and let yourself feel 5K pace or faster. You can add those finishers like Bracken loves, you know, you bring them up quite a bit, finishing with your 200 meter reps. You can tack it on the end. So that's always something to think about. And what, not to put the cart in front of the horse, but when you make that shift to be like, okay, I'm ready to paint the ceiling, whatever that looks like, meaning now I need to get really comfortable running 5K pace, my goal pace, and I need to get comfortable running faster than it. So now 5K pace feels comfortable. That first transition is still going to be humbling. When I made it this summer chasing 5Ks, I went and started to try to rip 800 meter repeats faster than 5K pace by like 10 seconds a mile, trying to run in 215 to 2. It doesn't even matter. But point being, oh my God, Bracken, I had a great floor and I had a great backbone. But like the further I got from that, oh, did they hit hard? I did 6 by 800 meters trying to run 218 to 215 and it about killed me. I went and tried to run 64s to 66s for quarter mile repeats, and it was like I was starting all over. I was like, oh my gosh, this is horrible. I'm a loser. But guess what happened? 2 to 3 weeks later, after I finally adapted, then that door opened up for me, and then I could access it. But like when you make that transition, don't expect it to be butterflies and rainbows, because it's not going to be. It's going to be uncomfortable when you get into the meat and potatoes of it. And expect that too is what I'm getting at. But it will come around. I don't know if you've experienced that, but it was very humbling when I started my overspeed training phase. You have?
Yeah, I think it takes 3 sessions minimum.
It took me 3.
The first one, you're excited and you get punched in the face. You are not efficient with your movements. It's too costly. And part of it's how excited you are at how great this is going to be. And it sucks. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the second one, you go in dreading it and it's not great. And then the third, you start to feel better. So it takes a minimum of 3 sessions to start feeling that physiological just movement pattern, that efficiency we talk about, where I'm running the same pace and I'm not trying as hard, or it's not costing me as much, or I just feel smoother at it. You need at least 3.
Took me 3.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah. If your floor is high, you don't need more than 3 to 5, but you got to get at least 3 in.
Yeah, that was exactly my experience. And at that, so I don't, not again, I kind of got us ahead of ourselves by that transition, but you get the point with what the volume of your quality sessions. Do you want to throw out just a couple examples of some of your favorite, like let's talk some over volume sessions, and then let's talk like the spicy sharpening stuff.
Yeah. So everyone knows I love 10 to 12 by 3 minutes. I love 5 to 6 by 5 or 6 minutes. I love those, or going 5 by 2K. But if you want to just do it on the terrain you're going to be at, usually you go by distance. So I like high volume. We're talking 8 to 10 by 800 for a lot of people. You're talking 6 to 8 by 1,000 for a lot of people. Talking 5 to 6 by mile. Those type of workouts with short rest, 45 to 90 seconds rest. I was talking with an athlete the other day who is a pretty successful athlete in our space, but not a classically trained runner. And they said something that was interesting, and I may have even referenced this on here. And they just said, I don't really know pacing, but I know rest periods. I know the rest interval. If I look at my schedule and I see less than a minute, I know I have to be cautious in the workout.
Yep.
And if I see around a minute and a half or two, I know I'm working moderately hard. And if it's 3 minutes or longer rest, I know I'm supposed to need the rest. And I thought that was a really cool understanding from a non-runner perspective. Like, I don't know pace, but I know recovery. And if you're giving me a lot, it means I'm supposed to give a lot. And if you're giving me a little, I'm not supposed to give a lot on any one given rep. And so we're starting with these short rest reps where we're just building up, like you said, 5-6 miles of volume so that a 3-mile race is just more sustainable physically for our bodies.
Okay, well, let's say somebody is running mile repeats in 12 minutes. Let's say they're a 40-minute 5K-er.
Okay.
Does that change for you? Like, still, no, suck it up, 45 seconds rest on your mile repeats, or do we have to lengthen that based on ability? It's something that I'm sure a few people are asking themselves that. Like, I can't do mile repeats. They take me 10 minutes. Like, a minute rest? Are you kidding me right now? Like, that's rude.
Yep.
Would you say that needs to be adjusted?
Yeah, it does. And for that type of athlete, I alternate because they're not training for a 5K by typical standards. They're really training more for a 10K as it is. And so they have to go above that. Mm-hmm. If their race is going to be 45 minutes long, that's an elite, you know, that's closer to a 10-mile race for an elite athlete. And so you have to have some of that present. So half of the workouts I do based on time. If this were a 3-minute interval for 1,000 for a high-level runner, we're doing 10 by 3 minutes today. But then the next time, this is an over-distance day, we're doing the miles and we're getting it done, but we're treating this as a quality long-run workout instead. So I don't know if there is a perfect route to this, but they must get accustomed to the time on feet and the number of impacts they're going to have. But they also have to get the actual engine work we're trying to get done, which won't happen with 12-minute miles. So I think you split the difference. Like everything I ever do, I hedge my bets.
and I agree with that. I like, you know, as a rule of thumb, like the, you know, the 3-to-1 ratio is fantastic. You're 3 minutes on, 1 minute off. If you're running 6-minute miles, maybe 2 minutes, you get somewhere in the middle ground between over like speed training, but also still stay power. That third principle, I really like, you know, 3-1, 5-2, 7-3. Like if you're running 7-minute miles, maybe you could justify 3 minutes jog. Your heart rate's not going to, you know, plummet, but you might need the recovery. It's on the high side, but anyways, the 3-to-1, I guess that's usually my starting point anyways. And if speed's a priority that day, maybe it goes 2-to-1 or even equal, which then, you know, you're in for it. But I like the 3-to-1 principle general. You can kind of get by with most things on that one. That's why 3-1's such a staple, or 1,000-meter repeats with a minute rest. It's like staple. I just think it's a good ratio. Your heart rate can't come down enough. It turns itself into a weaving in and out of threshold the entire workout. if it's done right, and you just get the intended stimulus for the day on typically that ratio.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
As we're talking, you can feel the people who are unbelievers, right? And there is a way for these people to have their cake and eat it too.
I don't feel that. I don't feel that. I'm not feeling that. I think everybody's...
Oh, I feel it strong, Kirk.
The woo-woo, they're believing us. No?
Oh, I think it's 80-20 at best.
No, they're putting money in the donation bin. They're waving our flag. Our bumper stickers are on their car. That's where I think we're at.
All right. Well, for the people who are driving around keying up those cars, there is a middle ground for you.
Okay.
And there's a style of training that is built around this. And this is a style that I followed for probably a year, year and a half when I was doing some OCR training. And it was multi-pace training. And so all my workouts, I would start with about 30 to 50% of any of those threshold workouts I just talked about. Instead of 10 by 1,000, I would do 3 by 1,000. Instead of 3 by 2 mile, I would do 1 by 2 mile. Or sometimes 2 by 2 mile. Somewhere between 30 and maybe even 60% of a full threshold workout. And then I would move into some faster stuff. Let's say I did 1 by 2 mile, 4 by 800 at 5K pace, and 4 by 400 at mile pace. That's a multi-pace workout. Start with your threshold work, work on your floor, then work on the walls, then work on the ceiling. And the way this works is that early on, the buy-in of threshold work takes up 3/4 of the work. And then you do a little bit of 5K. Let's say you're going to go 6 by 1,000, 2 by 800, 2 by 400. So 6 by 1,000 at 10K pace, 2 by 800 at 5K, 2 by 400 at mile. And throughout the progression, you slowly switch the percentage in the opposite direction, where by the end, you're just doing 2 by 1,000 and then 4 by 800 or 5 by 800 and 4 by 400. Those are the ways to start putting the little bits of speed in there earlier so that you can work on this the whole time. And even if it only gives you peace of mind, great. Or you're a very slow twitch athlete and you need more work, great. But you're still getting enough volume of the longer stuff to balance your equation. And that's a very, very realistic way of getting through this training.
Ladder workouts are absolutely fantastic. Multi-paced workouts, as you call them, whatever you want to call them. Yep. Beautiful. Did a workout the other day. I say that like it was yesterday, a couple weeks ago. It was simple. 2 by a mile, 4 by a quarter. Did that twice. Build some fatigue. Those were slower than 5K pace. Let myself touch 5K pace on the quarters. Rinse and repeat. You kind of can get the best of both worlds. You can build them both at the same time. As long as that speed work, the faster stuff, trendy term, is pre-fatigued already, because then it's meaningful speed work. You're having to touch pacing well fatigued already. If you open with it, it's different, right? So the idea is to try to access that quicker stuff after damage is already systemically happening. And then that becomes race relevant versus turning that the other way, I believe, and opening with your quarters and your 800s and then finishing with 2 mile or a 3 mile repeat. There, of course, you could justify that as purposeful. But I like having to turn them over, the legs that is, after we've forced ourselves to expend some energy already. That's racing. So I was going to bring up like one of the staples for the 5K for me. So 5-4-3-2-1 fartlek, where really you're running hard 5 minutes and float recovering for 2.5. Do that twice. Then go to 4 minutes, 2 minute recovery, 3 minutes, you have 90 seconds recovery. You're not jogging the recovery. You're keeping it somewhat purposeful, but you're getting, by the end, you're running 5K pace on those last minute long intervals and you kind of touch everything. That's really a multi-stage workout, like you're talking, of a different variety. But I think that might be the best bang for your buck for the non-believers. I mean, even the believers, I think, would benefit from that.
For sure.
Yeah.
And then you don't have to worry about, did I spend too long or too little in any one of the stages? It kind of covers your bases a little bit more. And the key, and you talked about it, is you don't do your speed work first. There's a school of thought that says, do your fastest work while you're freshest so that you run it the best and risk the least. And that is logically correct. However, our minds feel sharp fatigue and long fatigue as fatigue. And so if you start with 4x400 hard, the likelihood of you running less volume for that workout is very high. But if you get through your threshold intervals and then your 5K intervals, and now you've got 4x400 at the end, you're going to get through those because it's such a small piece of the pie compared to what you've already done. So doing the fast speed work first means you're going to be tired because fast speed work sucks from like a fatigue standpoint. It stings, it burns, it hurts. You're going to be less likely to do all your threshold workout after. So you do it late from that standpoint. And then again, so you're recruiting all this fatigued muscle fiber late in the workout when you're trying to run hard. It's just like golden hour for training. You want to do that last, even though it might seem counterintuitive.
Those reps mean more.
They do.
Those are the ones that move the needle the right direction under the right circumstances. We don't train to get better at training. We train to get better at racing generally, and putting yourself in non-race specific workouts by giving yourself, throwing a bone so you feel good about yourself, doesn't really translate, i.e. like speed work to start and then just grind out later. That doesn't quite sound how it works. So, okay, for the sake of time, because we got to put a bow tie on this thing, the last 3 weeks to 3 to 4 weeks leading in, I'll kick us off. For me here at this transition, I actually would like open with something like 3 by a mile at goal pace, if goal pace is reasonable, with like 3 minutes rest, and I would go rip. I would go actually try to run 5K worth of mile repeats. And at the end, I may tack on some quarters or some twos just to, with a lot of rest, to get some turnover. But I'm actually going to keep the interval still longer. You may say like mile repeats seem kind of long at this phase. But for me, and I said this last week with the mile, I got to sit in it and start to feel, I got to really feel it, what it's like to work and feel like I'm working at that pace, and then have to choose to sit in it. And so, and that's the first workout I did between my 5Ks was 3 by a mile with some finishers at goal 5K pace. I fell just short, which actually lined right up with my actual 5K when I raced it. My goal was 15 minutes. I ran 15:17, and my mile repeats told me exactly what I should, I would probably run close to that. But I would start with something longer, but very purposeful. And that's probably my starting point, like if I'm looking 3 to 4 weeks out. What about you?
Well, because I know my history of not needing to sharpen down much for 5Ks to run well, I'm doing my multi-pace at the end. So this is when I will do my multi-pace workouts. And they'll be very similar to the ones you and I ran together when we got together for our romance weekend. You took me on a 2 mile buy-in, which was a little faster than threshold, but slower than 5K. And then we did, what, 12 by 400? And then you did your buyout, and I wasn't fit enough to do the buyout. So I think I ran every other third lap with you or something like that.
Which was very helpful.
And it needed to be, because I had to provide something that day. But that would be my A workout for the week. And then the B workout would be flipped. Start out fast, maybe a mile at 5K or faster. And then maybe 2 or 3 by 2K in the middle at threshold, and then 4 by 400 at the end. So I would have sandwich workouts. One of them would be slower, faster, slower, and the other one would be faster, slower, faster. I'm not the type who wants to just go run 3 to 4 by mile at 5K. It's self-defeating. I'm not going to do well at it in training.
It sucked.
I have a hard time hitting race pace in training.
It hurt.
I'm going to leave feeling like I can't do this. So I'm going to dose it with sandwich style workouts.
Do you want to know what's funny is the next week I went 1 by a mile, 2 by 8, 4 by, I did exactly what you basically outlined as my follow up to that.
I like that.
You can look at my Strava. I'm not yanking your chain. And then I think I might've did twos as well to finish, but I literally did. So I'm along that theory there. Keep the backbone up front a bit and then sharpen down.
And then 1 week out. 1 week out, I'm going to do a standard threshold workout to just remind myself how much easier it is to run this now that I'm more fit and sharp. And then I'm going to do an actual speed workout, something like 8.66, 4.422 or something like that, all faster than 5K.
Yep.
That'll be my final week to sharpen me.
And what kind of rest? Because when we talked about the mile last week, we were saying, hey, take some long rest, right? Give yourself a chance to recover. So let's say you're running an 8. Let's just say for even numbers, you're faster than this, but let's say 3 minutes. It's 3 minutes to run your all really hard 800 meters. How much are you resting? Equal?
I'm probably taking 3 minutes across the board, maybe dropping it to 2 minutes for the fours. But yeah, equal rest is good until I get down to 400s. And then it's just right on the edge of not enough. And at this stage of the training, I don't need to work on anything else other than just running fast and hurting. So give myself a little extra time and then run it harder, which is almost never my strategy any other time of the year, except for then.
Yeah, I agree with the more rest. I think you could argue cases for keeping it somewhat shorter. You could, depending, but I think longer rest, if everything preceding it was done right, all the things we talked about, then that's going to probably be the best bang for your buck. I am still trying to hit roughly 3 miles of quality at this point now. Maybe a little more, maybe a little less, but now I'm actually circling my race distance numbers. I don't know about you, but I'm probably not, the volume's probably not less. If I'm thinking back to my workouts, I think I'm still trying to hit 3. And I know there's a place to not hit 3.1 total miles, but I think I'm, for the most part, still, and until that last week leading in, where then I'll dial that back. What about you?
Same thing all the way through, but that last one's going to be like 2 for me.
Okay. And then at that point, I'm ditching the traditional long run the last 3 weeks, and I'm doing some sort of threshold intervals mixed in, and maybe I'm only going 75 minutes, you know, something like that, yep. But I'm working inside of it and ditching the long, true long run. How long do you think long run should be for a 5K athlete? What do you think?
I think 70, 75 minutes is fine. But if you can handle 90 to 120 minutes and not impact your race, I mean, you're training throughout the week, it's only going to help most athletes to have a bigger aerobic engine.
Yep. I think 90, if you can handle it, 90. I think that's what a lot of the pros end up doing, don't they? Even some of the, they may run 100-mile weeks, but they're running 10-mile doubles 3 times a week, and then their long run might still only be 90, right, even on that volume.
I mean, the reigning world champ famously claims to never run longer than like 75, 80 minutes.
Who claims that? Jakob?
Jakob, yeah. Yeah, they don't go longer than like 15K in training.
Interesting.
But he'll run 140 miles a week. Right. But for the same reason, anything much longer than 80, 90 minutes will start to impact his ability to do it again the next day and the next day and the next day and the next day and the next day.
That's a good point. So I feel like we kind of had to sprint home here, but we've gone too long. So what else do you want to add or wedge in there? I know we threw most of the iceberg. There's probably a little left that you're curious about, but I think you get the idea. Anyways, what do you have that needs to be wedged in before we wrap this up?
Oh, I think the very best thing you can do to PR your 5K is to run a 5K before this 5K.
Yeah.
I think that's the key here, that you rarely PR on your first one.
Need a few cracks at it.
So run 2 of them.
Same goes for the mile we talked about last week. When you start getting longer, that's not the case. But I think not even the 10K. I think the 5K is where that might even stop, is you need one beforehand.
Yep. I fully agree on that.
How far beforehand? What's good? 3 weeks? Month?
Three weeks minimum is what I'd say, yeah.
I like a 3 to 5 week window.
I'd probably run one to cap off the threshold stage, and then I'd move into sharpening stage.
Like a month out or something?
Yep.
All right. I know we're buttoning this thing up, but hopefully you guys learned something. I think if anything, stay power is key. If you're questioning to go longer, shorter, go longer. Over duration on the sum total of your quality sessions. And you don't have to panic early. You can sharpen down the last month and literally race your absolute best in the 5K. So I don't know if we have anything else to add. Night school sounded like it went well week one. You're rolling into week 2. Very exciting, Bracken.
Yes. Thank you for everyone who showed up. I had a great time. I hope you did too. And I really appreciate the feedback during the call itself. The questions that were asked really helped to streamline what will be happening the next 2 weeks here. It helped tweak the lesson plan slightly for what's coming up this week, because the questions were all, just like we get on the Q&As, there were themes to it. So we're going to make sure that you're leaving with what you definitely want to get out of it. So I had a great time, and this week's going to be even better because now we start diving into the real good stuff.
Woo! And I don't mean to tease something, again, cart in front of the horse, but looks like there might just actually be a running public training camp happening, folks. And we're just before we can launch finite details on this situation. But we're very excited about it. Put a lot of thought into it. And it will be in the mountains. You're not coming in running a ski hill with us here in the Midwest. We're going to put you in a beautiful place, too. So we're going to hold your breath. But it's in the pipeline. And it's this summer. So surprise, there it is.
Within the week, I think we're going to launch.
Woo! All right. Should we wrap this thing up, Bracken?
Wrap it. If anything resonated with you on today's episode and you're curious about taking your training to the next level, check out therunningpublic.com, where we have a training plan to fit your needs.